You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see? You start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle and Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Did you have a great weekend? Wonderful day at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Oh, I bought so much fruit. It was just great. And, you know, tomatoes are slow. Everyone, oh, God, it's not sunny enough. We're not going to have tomatoes. But you know what? It was really late last year, too. So there's really nothing unusual about this year. And it seems to me that the Gravensteins, which I noticed someone is picking today, and here it is, the end of July, the Gravensteins seem to be right on time in spite of us not having sweltering heat. So that's a great thing. Makes me like the Gravenstein even more. And that's going to be the main subject of tonight's show. But first, we are going to talk about an upcoming event taking place next Saturday. We have in the studio with us my friend, my colleague, once my professor, partner in crime now and then, J.J. Wilson. J.J., welcome back to Mouthful.
Thank you. I get to be the first bite on the mouthful then. And, of course, I'm talking about food. Cooks and Books is our name of our game. We're putting on a benefit for the Sonoma County Annual Book Festival. That's coming up September 25th, by the way. But this event actually happens next Saturday, the 31st. Of July, and it happens out on a farm, which is probably why I get to be on Mouthful.
And that, is that it's on Chileno Valley Road, right?
Yes, the most beautiful part of our beautiful county, I have to say, West Chileno Valley, West Petaluma is what it is. And I've got the actual address here, but people can go to the website of the Book Fest, SoCo Book Fest, and find a lot of the details. Uh-huh. Because I plan to talk really fast, because you all always tell me on KRCB that I talk too slowly, and I must hurry it up.
I'll never tell you that, but you can talk at whatever speed you most prefer.
Well, I'll start with the story then, because I'm from the South, and it's many years ago when I first went to a most beautiful place where I could look at the Golden Gate Bridge and where I could enjoy everything I looked at, even vegetables. It was the first place I ever went to where I found out you could eat vegetables, not as a punishment, you know. It was at Green's Restaurant at Fort Mason. And amazingly, that wonderful place, which seemed like a mirage almost, an oasis, has become now iconic.
Absolutely.
And if you've been there, if your listeners have been down to Fort Mason, you'll know that not only is the food delicious, but you can park at Fort Mason.
You can park and you can watch the sea lions sunning themselves.
They were definitely lolling last time
I was there. It's the view that I most love.
Well, it's because of Annie Somerville, the wonderful executive chef, I mm-hmm. think, that it continues to not only sustain its standards and its traditions, but make them better all the time. And Annie Somerville is coming to Sonoma County to visit us and to speak with Jonah Raskin in conversation, another wonderful locavore fellow. And it's at Windrush Farm, which is a working farm, and it's going to be, of course, food, wine, music, and then talk. And I bet we end up swapping recipes before long. I just, you know, I think that'll be part of the fun. We're going to make some of Annie's recipes for the occasion.
Oh, you're going to make recipes from? She has a new book out, right?
Everyday Greens. The first one was called Field of Greens.
Field of Greens.
And I've been cooking out of that for years. I just got my hands on Everyday Greens, and it's a beautiful book indeed. And we're going to actually have printed up some recipes from the books to hand out as door prizes. And Oak Hill Farm has given us a beautiful basket, is going to give us a basket full of edible vegetables that we can just have for table decorations that people mm-hmm. can eat. And there's, of course, going to be a raffle auction, all those interesting mm-hmm. things. But I thought it was so nice of Annie Somerville to say that she would give $100 gift certificate to Greens, and I'm just hoping
it's okay.
Really,
Greens is a big place; they can do it.
I know, I realize, but still, that seems. I mean, when it gets into the three digits, I faint. Yeah. And Mark Durkheising, also from Parkside, uh-huh. has offered us some gift certificates and other nice things.
I'll give you some books.
We love that, Michelle. Thank you. Yeah,
people,
I hope I
people
win.
Don't know that I wrote a vegetarian guide to the Bay Area. No one knows about it because I never talk about it.
I admit I didn't know that.
It was one of those works for hire, and I have.
Aren't they all?
No, some of them I actually get royalties. But
paid up front.
This was a work for hire. It's not a happy story, but you know, and
we'll get that another time.
And the book was designed to make vegetarians happy. Whether they were with omnivores, carnivores, or fellow vegetarians. So I'm happy to get it. Sort of fits in with your theme.
It does fit.
And
with
Greens
ours.
Figures prominently. Greens
That's
is
wonderful.
Right there.
That's
yeah.
wonderful. Now, I think what I love about Greens is, I mean, I've taken my meat and potatoes brother there, and he felt he didn't miss meat. You know, it's that they teach you that vegetables are enough. And I think that's wonderful, you know, that you don't need anything else. So anyway, we'll have Annie there telling us about her adventures mm-hmm. at Greens and her adventures writing the books and her love of books, mm-hmm. which she follows up on beautifully. And kids can come free. We do charge the people coming.
It's a fundraiser. So
it's
fundraiser. A good thing to know you charge.
But we're kind of, you know, foolish about it. We kind of make family discounts and things. But I hope that you'll call me up and ask me about those. 795-9028.
That's of course, 795-9028.
And it's J.J. Wilson. Or you can email me. At boxcar@sonic.net. And
could you just.
We also do tickets through brown
paper tickets.
Paper tickets.
But that's
yeah.
boxcar.
Yes.
I want you to explain that. Every time I send you an email, I think, well, did she just think about riding the rails or did she actually ride them?
No. Robin Pressman asked me the same thing, and I told her it better be off the air because it's a little bit naughty story, which I'll tell you about sometime over a glass of wine,
okay.
Michelle, not when you have so much to do tonight. But what else do I need to tell you about this event, aside from the fact that you
get to... Is it going to be the Green String Band playing?
No, but Aaron won't be able to play okay. this time because he's got a paying gig, a wedding gig.
So
but
who is
we
the
have
music?
A neat gal... her name is Amy, and she's adorable. What is her last name? This is terrible. I should be giving her the publicity.
Well, more importantly, what kind of music?
It's accordion.
Oh, wonderful. I love
she's
accordion music.
She's a one-woman band. She played at the recent doll show at Petaluma Art Center, which I love to publicize to. I went yesterday. I couldn't believe it. Dolls have changed their spots. These were sculptures. They are wonderful. At the Petaluma Art Center.
Oh, how interesting.
Do go. You'll be amazed. Shasha Higbee, you know, and but there are many other people there whom I didn't know. I'm not here to talk about the Petaluma Art Center, but I'm glad I am. It's a wonderful phenomenon. But what another thing that we offer is the delicious pizza that my sister Mimi makes in her brick oven.
And you're going to feature green foods.
Everything's going to be green if I have anything to say about it. I'm thinking of putting green Thai and the cupcakes. No, 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 no. I wouldn't do that.
Are you going to have a vinho verde from Portugal?
No. What is that?
Well, it translates, of course, green wine, but it's actually, and it does have a sort of pale greenish tint to it, but it's a low alcohol, slightly effervescent white wine from Portugal, and you see it everywhere if you're
there. I will now.
And then you can, now you see it in the United States. Traversos has been trying to get one. One of the things that's very nice about it, other than it's lean, it's crisp, it's usually not sweet, it's low alcohol, it's also usually very inexpensive.
I love all those things you've said. I'm going to dash out and get some the minute I get out of this place. But we are going to stick more with local wines.
Yes, and that makes sense. And how much is it to
go? I have to say lemonade, too.
Oh, lemonade.
Yeah. So that we ask for a donation of $50 if you can afford it per person. And kids come free. And kids get to feed the goats. And I saw some grown-ups out there doing it, too. I don't know why it's so fun to feed
feeding goats. Feeding goats is really fun. Because they're such eager eaters.
They are voracious.
You know, they'll eat anything. Just about anything.
Now, they aren't picky.
It's a fundraiser for the book festival, so talk just a little bit about when the book festival is coming up and what will be happening.
The book festival, it happens on the Saturday, the 25th of September. On Old Courthouse Square, there'll be booth after booth, each one like opening a different present in a way. Mm-hmm. You meet authors, you have all kinds of adventures on the square, and that's where I hang out. I work with the Sitting Room Library, and we have a lot of fun there, giving things away and talking to people. There are readings on the square, too. Mm-hmm. Poets read on the square, and panels of groups of people from book groups and things like the Redwood Writers Organization. Right. They are so wonderful, and they have a special tent of speakers. And then in the forum room of the library, they have the set of big wheels, like Abraham Verghese, do you know, who wrote Cutting the Stone? Everyone's so excited about it. Carol Slenica, Joyce Maynard, Tamim Ansari, Joan Frank, wonderful local writer, just written an amazing collection of stories. Chester Aaron of Garlic fame and many others. Stephen Kessler from up in Gualala, and Buzzy Martin, Alta Eflund, who is actually married to Stephen Kessler, I remember. Mm-hmm. She's very interesting. Elif Bauteman, Anita Barrows, Catherine Ma, Yu-Yin Lee. She is such a good writer.
Yeah.
Terrifying. It makes Dostoevsky look like Sesame Street. You know, I mean, she is, but I'm so interested to meet her. I'm going to sneak off the square for that one. And Dr. Nancy Kay, there are all kinds of poets. Molly Fisk, Catherine Hastings, the wonderful local poet, Thomas Sentinella. I'm not on the authors committee, so I don't even know how to pronounce all these names. I've got
some
learning.
But it's a big group, and it's taking place September
25th. And 25th. It's free. I mean, we collect from you all at this point so we can offer it free to the community. And really, books need the spotlight, you
know.
Absolutely. One day of the entire year when we don't think about wine and food, we really just think about the other kind of food, the books. You know?
Yes, you're not on Facebook. You're actually face-to-face, and that's a great thing. So if you want information, you give J.J. Wilson a call at 795-9028. Of course, that's a 707 area code, or send her an email at boxcar at sonic.net. And of course, you can always send me your questions as well. And I wrap all this up again at the end of the hour. JJ, thanks so much.
I know you have
two wonderful young women waiting for you at home.
I do. Tegan and Matea. I hope they're listening so they hear their names. But you know what? If you come to the event, I promise to tell you the boxcar story.
Now, there's a reason to go. We'll be right back with talk about the Gravenstein apple.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home. I just got word from the guy who heard from the guy next door to me. He met just loves to pet and fits you to a T. So don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me till I come marching home. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. With anyone else but her. No, 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 not a single soul but me. No, no, no. Don't you sit apple tree with anyone else but me. Not till you see me. Not until you see me marching home. Home, 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 sweet home. Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. With anyone else but her. No, 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 not a single soul but me. No, no, no. Don't you go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me. Not till you see me. Not until you see me marching home. Home, 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 sweet home. Just wait till I come marching home. Marching home, then we'll go arm in arm and sit down under the apple tree, baby, just you and me. When I come marching home.
You are listening to Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Hope you enjoyed JJ. That's a nice event that they put on every year, and it's gosh the 10th or 11th year of the book festival. Mm-hmm. And by books, we mean something you can hold in your hand and feel the paper. It's a good thing. Hi, Paula.
Hi, Michelle.
It's Paula Downing, manager of the Sebastopol Market and the Santa Rosa Markets. Back again. You should just be a regular.
It's Sunday night. I'm supposed to be in bed. What are you?
So we have Gravenstein Day coming up next Sunday. Mm-hmm. At the Sebastopol Farmers Market.
Right.
And then you're expanding this year. You're going to other farmers markets.
We are.
I know that Mouthful will be live at the Healdsburg Farmers Market on August 28th. Mm-hmm. But before that, on August 21st, you have the Petaluma Farmers Market and the Santa Rosa Farmers Market on the 7th.
Yeah, we're going to have lots of honoring the Gravensteins over the county. I'm excited about that.
Tell me about the project and why and what.
Well, it started 7 or 8 years ago with a woman named Paula Shatkin from Slow Food Russian River, who was horrified by watching the apple trees go. And she got on this program with this little sort of kick of her own, and she started going around and meeting all the apple farmers and finding out who grew Gravensteins. And out of that emerged the Save the Gravenstein, which is connected with Slow Food. They have it's called a Presidia, and it's a kind of a term for saving indigenous fruit.
Yes.
Yeah, the ARC. I have never quite understood the references, so I don't quite understand the terminology on that. And it was a Slow Food connection with her. So she went around trying to save the Gravensteins, and over the past 7 years, it's emerged into this really fun thing. I mean, we started doing
was it 3 years ago in Sebastopol, and you came with Mouthful?
I think it was four.
And, was it four? And you and we invited Waters. Alice Waters.
Maybe that one was three.
Yeah, and you know, people, we have fresh pressed apple juice. There's a press there, and you just get a taste of apple juice, and you can meet a few apple farmers, and just kind of think of what a lucky thing we are to have apples in our lives, right in our backyards. And yeah. So that part and I like.
A couple things we should say about the Gravenstein is, first of all, it's the first apple of the year. It ripens before the other ones ripen. It's the initial apple. And interesting, I mean, to me, I just think it's such a perfect example of Mother Nature's wisdom. Because the Gravenstein ripens when the winter apples are done and the fall apples haven't started yet. So here comes this extremely flavorful apple. It's known as the most flavorful. In fact, a lot of Gravensteins are sold to canneries further south because a little bit of Gravenstein juice and a little bit of Gravensteins are added to commercial apple juice and applesauce. So here comes this apple, the first one. But it's not a keeper. It's not a storage apple. You can't store it for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 3 months like you can some apples. It's when you enjoy it now, and then it's time for the other ones. Mm-hmm. And I like that quality. It's the most ephemeral of the apples. And one thing I think it's important to understand when we talk about saving the Gravenstein and talk about the disappearing apples. Apples were planted in part because nobody was buying grapes. And vineyards and grapevines were being ripped out all over Sonoma County 100 years ago, 110, 120 years ago, and apples were put in. And I know for me, that always makes me panic a little bit less. It's like, it's just the cycles. Mm-hmm. And I still think, I don't mean to diminish Paula's effort at all or diminish, you know, the celebration of the Gravenstein, but I just find it calming that, it's a pendulum or it's a cycle. Mm-hmm. And I remember also Perry Kozlowski told me many years ago, he was talking about the replacement of orchards with vineyards. And he says, the lowest it will go is 300 acres. And it will not drop any lower than that in this cycle. Uh-huh. So I was just like, it's not going to vanish. Anyway, there's my 2 cents worth. So we also have in the studio with us John Colling.
Appleseed. John Appleseed.
Yes. Was it? Yes. Okay.
John. Let's make it easy on you.
And you have Solana Gold.
That's correct.
Why don't you tell us about that company?
Solana Gold. So I grow organic apples and have been since the late 70s. And I sell fresh apples to the produce distributors, and so people can enjoy the apples that way, which is, you know, in their raw form, which is highest nutrition, raw. And then we also have, for the people who you know, like to eat processed apple products, I have apple juice, apple sauce, and vinegar, and canned pears. And I wholesale that those processed apple products to health food distributors. And they distribute to the health food stores.
But you wholesale them, under the label Solana Gold.
Label Solana Gold Organics. Right. Yes, and I have numbered sizes of different apple juice, different sizes, mm-hmm. and apple sauces combined with boysenberries and raspberries and peaches and mm-hmm. so forth. And vinegar. You know, vinegar is a great health drink.
Where do you make your vinegar?
At Manzana Products in Green Valley Road in Sebastopol. Uh-huh.
And is it actually made with Gravensteins?
Gravensteins make the best vinegar. Mm-hmm. And the workers at the plant will tell you that, and we all know it. They just, they're a high acidity, mm-hmm. the vinegar bacteria like that high acidity of the Gravenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're hungry.
Well, you know, the vinegar bacteria uses alcohol as a food source, but they also need, you just can't feed them alcohol. You have to mm-hmm. have some nutrition, and mm-hmm. And they really respond well, and they produce extra. They're very very efficient when it comes to Gravenstein mm-hmm. versus some of the other varieties of apple juice.
So, do you use a variety of apples throughout the year to make your vinegar?
Yeah, we make vinegar. You know, but when you talked about when the Gravensteins come mm-hmm. ripe in August, there's no other apple variety around, so mm-hmm. we make 100% Gravenstein vinegar in the early part of the season, and then as the later apples start coming in, then we combine them. We don't. I don't know of anyone who does a varietal Gravenstein
vinegar. No, I've never seen one.
Versus,
so you do a blend.
We blend them and we put them in big stainless tanks and it gets all blended together.
And do you sell, it seems to me these days, health food markets and independently owned supermarkets, that sort of the lines between them are blurring. So would you find your products in places like Oliver's Market,
yeah,
Pacific
Oliver's Market,
that sort of thing?
And Fiesta Market, Fircrest Market, Independence. The independents are generally more open and favorable to supporting local producers, smaller producers, and they don't gravitate they don't gravitate towards the large industrial suppliers that you know a great big chain store would tend to favor.
And I should actually say that on a upcoming episode of Mouthful, we're going to be addressing just that, of what it takes to be an independent marketer versus being, you know, a huge one chain, and how you make those decisions to get local brands.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, you interact with people that are more your size.
Yeah. There you go.
If
that's a good way
if you're
to
a smaller supplier, you work with independent market or independent retailers. And if you're a larger supplier, you need lots of volume, then you would tend to go with the you know, the mass produce, you know, the grocery chains that have hundreds of outlets.
So tell me about growing apples. Where do you grow?
I grow my home orchard's on Jerusalem Way in Sebastopol.
And what's the nearest cross street?
The cross street's High School Road.
Okay, that's why I thought it was off High School, but yeah. I wasn't positive.
I like saying the word Jerusalem. You know, you get the, it's politically non-correct. I take care of a lot of orchards in the Sebastopol area and farm those and grow them organically. This was a hard year to grow organically because of all the rains we had in the spring, which put a higher burden on
so what do you do?
The trees to resist scab and mildew, which are fungus diseases.
How do you help them organically?
Well, there's substances you can spray on the trees organically to assist the tree in resisting these pathogens, and sulfur, lime sulfur.
There are substances you can use.
There are substances that are naturally derived. Uh-huh. They're mined from the earth. For instance, you can use sulfur that's mined from a mine in North Dakota, South Dakota, but you can't use sulfur that's a byproduct of petroleum distillation. For instance, like on sulfur. The organic regulations are quite strict and they have a chain of command. And so I think people can rest assured that if it says organic, there's the risks of the chemical supply company bending the rules, or the applicator, or the farm that supplies it, or the store that sells it. There's teeth in the law, and there's too much backlash and too many employees to blow the whistle, so that I would say there's much less chance of organic foul play than there was even 20 years ago.
Interesting.
So people can rest assured that if they spend the extra money for organic, they are getting organic.
And when you say you take care of several orchards, so what that says to me is there are people who have apples. They don't want to take them out, but they don't want to deal with them.
Yeah, they have.
So you take care of them and you get the apples?
Yeah, they have a rural residence on 2 acres or 5 acres or 8 acres, and they have apple trees that have been that are remnants of the past larger farms that have been reduced in size, ranchettes, and yeah, it's not efficient for them to take care of a few acres of apples, so they lease them out to farmers like myself, and we cultivate, keep the trees healthy, and they like the the interaction is they feel they're doing something to the community, and it doesn't cost them anything, and they might even make a little bit. In the past, we were able to return to the landowners. We used to be able to pay their rent.
Really?
I mean, not their rent, but their taxes, their property taxes. And as the years went on and financial difficulties, the Apple industry, you know, the Press Democrat has talked about, you know, the demise of the Apple industry. And it's hard to make a, you know, because some of the cost, some of the processing, our apples are mostly processing apples, which the processing value of the apples has not really changed very much in 30 years.
Yeah, my understanding is the producers, the apple growers of Sebastopol, made a strategic error.
That's correct, but more than one.
Yeah, but they made one when they decided to throw in their lot with processing rather than
fresh market
and creating, you know, a national, you know, demand, because Washington State did that.
Yeah, and they Washington State embraced the new tech, new varieties. Of course, Washington State had a few advantages of volcanic soils, lots of water, cheaper land, less neighbors, and plus they didn't have existing orchards that already were planted. They starting out with bare land. The Sebastopol growers started out with orchards that were fully mature. It's hard for an apple grower to cut down a 50-year-old tree or either cut it down and replant or graft it over to a new variety when he's going to lose 2, 3, 4, 5 years of production. And
that's interesting. Washington did it by planting. They decided, okay, we're going to grow apples. Let's plant them and market them.
Yes, yeah, so,
they
you
know, didn't have a long history.
No, they didn't. They didn't start in 1880 or 1900 right. or 1920. I think most of Washington got planted in apples. Off the top of my head, I would probably say most of them probably got planted in the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Uh-huh.
And
what was there before? What did they plow in to plant apples?
I think it was virgin land.
Oh, it was virgin land. Yeah, timberland.
Because open
meadow.
Open plains, open grassland plains. Yeah, I mean, there's still open grassland plains there in central.
So it's eastern Washington, mostly.
Central and eastern Washington. Yeah, and you know, with the irrigation that comes from their water projects, that's what made the eastern and western and central Washington more productive because of the water. Mm-hmm. Anyway, plus. It's easier to do cold storage in Washington in the wintertime. The buildings keep the apples from freezing too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you practically can, you know, you control the atmosphere, you lock down the building, and you don't really have to address the temperature too much because it's plenty cold enough.
Yeah.
So there's a certain energy savings efficiency there.
Uh-huh.
So successful growers didn't get involved, didn't invest in cold storage.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't invest in new varieties. They didn't concentrate in the fresh market, even though we're so close to the Bay Area and Los Angeles. And so here we are. Well, you know, there's some other old varieties of apples that you know, perhaps if we see so much success with the Gravenstein variety, maybe we'll start a presidium for the Rome variety.
Interesting. So we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about the history of the Gravenstein after we take this little break.
Just gonna be you and me under that apple sucker tree. Support for Mouthful on KRCB-FM comes from our members and from Tierra Vegetables, offering community-supported agriculture, sustainably produced Sonoma-grown chilies, beans, fresh-picked vegetables, and wool products. Tierra Vegetables Farm Stand is located at 651 Airport Boulevard in Santa Rosa. More online at tierravegetables.com. Now back to Mouthful. Michelle?
Thank you, Lawrence. So we're going to talk about the history of the Gravenstein. And one thing I love knowing about our history is the wonderful Griffith Woods. They're off of Laguna in Santa Rosa, not in Sebastopol. And, oh, you drive down this long road, you know, really a long driveway, and you end up in this amazing little park-like atmosphere with a creek running through it. And then if you walk a little, and it's obviously, it's been prettified. I mean, there's some lawn and there have been some improvements that are very nice. I've been there for, gosh, 3 or 4 decades I've visited the place. But then if you walk back even further, there's the old amphitheater. Mm-hmm. And I swear.
Do you know the history of the amphitheater?
A little
bit.
Who
put it in or how it started there? It's so amazing.
Tell us.
You know, I'm going to wait until we can have Ned Kuhn come onto Mouthful to get it really accurate. But when you go there, and it's really old, and a couple of friends have got, I've seen them get married there.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you just listen, you can hear, you know, the suffragettes. You can hear, you know, over the decades, all the different people who gathered there. I just loved it. Uh-huh. Well, as it turns out, Nathaniel Griffith, after whom it is named, Griffith Woods, is considered to be the first man to plant apple trees in the Gold Ridge District. Uh-huh. And he planted them there at Griffith Woods. They're long gone now, and it's been divided up. Yeah. But that a chunk of that history is still there.
Well, I'm going to go see Ned this week and hopefully get some photographs, so I'll show you.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'd love to see them.
Of the family.
So what else do we know? The Russians are credited with putting in the Gravenstein at Fort Ross.
Above Fort Ross. Uh-huh. And did you know that above Fort Ross on that hillside up there, there is the remnants of Gravenstein apples up on that hillside? And when I went there and looked at them, I asked the question to myself, is it possible these trees are really, you know, 175 years old? I mean, I didn't come to a conclusion. I don't know. Uh-huh. But they look, but because of the weather out there, you know, the wind and the coldness and the harshness of the environment, I think, you know, that it's a much different environment than we have in Sebastopol. So it's hard for me to look at a Sebastopol Gravenstein and say, well, this is a tree that's 100 years old in Sebastopol, and then go out to the coast and say, this is a tree that is 175 years old. But the question is open to me. I'd like some botanist or, you know, some expert to go out there and really determine, is it possible that those are the original Fort Ross trees? I know some people that go and they have like an annual pilgrimage. They go up there on that hill and they gather those apples because they're basically abandoned by the state.
Oh, they are. So it's on state property.
It's on state property and it's basically abandoned. It's just wild and crazy and it's like going back in time.
The California rare fruit growers were at the Santa Rosa market last week, and they have a lot of Fort Ross. What do you call that?
Scions, yeah.
Yeah, that they get. I guess, I don't know if they go out there and get them, but they were selling, 5-gallon ones.
Fort Ross scions.
Yeah, I think that's how they described it.
Well, that's a piece of history.
Yeah.
Now, under, say, standard normal conditions, do we know the lifespan of the Gravenstein tree?
In Sebastopol, on my home ranch, I've got trees that are 120, 110, 115 years old.
And
I know some other ones on a place on Green Valley Road that are well over 100 years also.
Uh-huh. And are they still
productive? Still, they have the wear. They show their age. But it gives them a lot of character, and you get a lot of respect for, you know, a tree that's got 9 or 10 foot circumference. Yeah. It gets your attention.
I live in an apple orchard, or I'm surrounded by apples on a couple sides, and I have friends who own a very old apple. So I've been in Sebastopol a long time, but I just realized, say, if you think about olives, I don't know if we know the end of an olive tree's lifetime. They live 500, 600, 800 years.
That's correct.
So I'm just wondering if we know that about the apple trees.
Well, I guess you'd have to, I mean, supposedly Kazakhstan in Western Russia is supposed to be the birthplace of the apples. It's supposed to have thousands and thousands of wild apples that's growing like a forest in the hillsides there. And so I guess if you had 300 or 400 year old apple trees, I guess that's where you'd find them. But I haven't had the luxury of going there on vacation.
I have an apple research field trip.
There you go.
Hey, well, you know, we could have a contest, and you know, the lucky apple grower gets a partially paid trip to Kazakhstan.
So, John, how did you get into apple farming originally?
I read a book by Robert Price, Johnny Appleseed, Man and Myth, and it inspired me that life was more than a paycheck and more than a obligation or responsibility. It was an opportunity for an adventure.
So at that point, who was your paycheck from?
My paycheck was from Hewlett Packard.
Oh, okay.
In Silicon Valley and Page Mill Road in the 70s. Uh-huh. And I felt that there was an opportunity for me to jump out before I was hooked. And if you feel an addiction coming on, maybe it's time to break out before an addiction gets you. So I felt that it was possible that I could end up like some of these guys in this corporation, and that all I could think about was retiring in 5 or 10 years, like a lot of them talked about. And when you're in your 20s, that kind of scary. So fear motivated me to take this book seriously and seek out an adventure. So I said, you know what? This sounds like an adventure. I want to have a relationship with some apple trees.
And how long did it take you to find them?
Actually, when I was working on Hewlett Packard, after being a student and being broke for a number of years, after Hewlett Packard paid me for 3-4 years, I had so much money, I bought an apple orchard up in Sebastopol because I didn't know what to do with the money.
Wow.
With the whole $1,500 a month they gave me, you know?
But you could get an apple orchard for how much in those days?
Well, in those days, you could buy an apple orchard for
$40,000.
Yeah. So when I quit my job at Hewlett Packard, I...
So you had already bought the property?
I'd already bought that first farm,
okay.
Yeah. And then I... So I jumped off the cliff and left, Hewlett Packard and lived off the land and started talking to trees at night and working on them in the daytime, and not just thinking this is an adventure, this will be fun, and not really planning to, spend my whole life being involved with apple trees. But, I enjoyed it and I felt free, and so I continued, and so here I am. Mm-hmm. And I can't promise you that I'm going to go Gravenstein's to the day I die. But
you don't need to. We're not asking for the promise.
On the other hand, it wouldn't be such a bad sentence.
Mm-hmm. How is this year? How do you determine what's going to be a good year? I know that weather in the spring during the bloom is important. What are some of the other factors that are important in determining that it's going to be a good year or a bad year?
Well, I think some of the weather factors that are good for wine grapes are also good for a lot of other fruits too. Mm-hmm. And apples, a slow ripening season is good for apples. As long as you get we have a mild summer but we have sunlight, and so it's not so much
light without heat.
Yeah, and it's not so much the heat, because a lot of heat can actually make the skin tougher and burn the skin and be a little tougher on the leaves for drawing moisture from the soil. So when you have sun but not a lot of heat, it's a lot easier on the leaves.
Sounds like they like the same thing I do. Light's fine. Forget heat.
Yeah.
So what do you like to do other than turn your apples into products? And take care of the trees. How do you like to enjoy apples?
I like to prune trees.
Okay.
It's being a certain succumbing to some of the pressures of economic reality. In the wintertime, I spend a lot of time in the office shuffling papers, making phone calls, and getting prepared for the next year. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to prune trees as much as I'd like to, like the old days when I first started out. But there's something just, really great about running around in the bosom of an apple tree with a chainsaw or pruning shears with a ladder, and trimming the hair of these girls till they just sing with delight, and you go on to the next tree. It's kind of like being an apple tree gigolo.
Okay. How big is it? As soon as you said standing in the tree, so you've got this big canopy over you.
And grabs are the best. I mean, grabs are wonderful because they're so huge. They're 30, 35 feet tall, or when you got a big 100 or 120-year-old one. And mm-hmm. Canopies are 30 feet wide. The base of the tree is 9, 10 feet circumference. I mean, you can wander around inside the tree on the branches like it was it was bigger than my living room.
A new meaning to the word treehouse.
Yes.
You just move your furniture out under it.
And you have to be sure-footed, and you have lots of limbs to grab onto, and you just kind of it's so big it defies a ladder in a person. It's too time-consuming to move the ladder around 13 times around this gigantic tree.
So you're in the tree.
So you put the ladder up into the tree, and you just envelop and jump into the tree and start walking around in there and pruning and trimming. Mm-hmm. And it's great exercise, and it's fun. I mean, I used to have German foreign exchange students would come with me, and they would we would sing, in the old days the Mexicans even sang. They don't sing as much recently. I think that they're concentrating too much because we pay them by the piece rate. I think they sang more when we paid them by the hour. Now we pay them by the number of trees they prune per day, and so they don't sing quite as much.
That's too bad.
Well, I would
imagine the trees like being sung to.
I think so. But, maybe if the apple growers start making lots of money, we can go back to paying them by the hour and we have more singing in the orchard.
Well, we were having a conversation on the way down here, and one of the things that John was saying was that when, people won't spend another whatever to buy good quality food, they'll go for the cheaper food and make their decisions on that. But then when you get later in life, you spend a lot of money on health care and doctors,
pills
and all that
and
stuff,
prescriptions,
you know?
And
better
and
to
diagnosis.
Spend it, right, on good quality food than to spend it on weird medicines or something.
Besides the benefit of when you eat good food, the way you feel, you talk to vegetarians, you talk to people that have curtailed, they still eat meat, but they're not meataholics, and you talk to these certain kind of people, and there are people that are into health and they're on top of their health and they're taking care of it and they know what they're doing, and it's contagious, the benefit to their life. They're happy, their life seems to go together, they're not sweating the details, they're not full of anxiety and nervous.
Well, different vegetarians than I do. Believe me.
Well,
but what the thing that
I was looking at Paula when I was saying that.
The thing that I really see is people who eat good food versus people who buy eggs that you can get for, $1.39 a dozen, and you don't even want to think about where those chickens live and how they live, versus people who will pay $5 or $6 or sometimes even $7 a dozen to get eggs from chickens that, live next door or a couple houses down. The people who sort of understand that what you're paying for, you're paying for more than just eggs when you're
buying trust. You're buying faith.
But you're also buying flavor. You're buying nutrients. You're mm-hmm. buying mm-hmm. a whole healthy mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. And the same with meat.
You're buying community too.
Yeah, you're buying community. So I find the people who think about food that way, rather than people who give lip service to it and then go and get the cheapest food they can at Costco or something.
Well, if you spend that $5 for that dozen eggs, the question I would ask myself, or I'd ask the, if someone's concerned about their health, is that optimism that you're doing the best thing for your body, if you believe and trust that that is you're doing very good for your body, that even just the mental suggestion to yourself that you're doing the ultimate for your own body health, it could have a placebo effect that far outweighs that extra $4.
It could. I mean, now we're getting into this whole topic that, I mean, we could go down this path forever. And who has access to food that's really healthy? Mm-hmm. Because at the same time I say that, and I'm the person who will pay $5, $6, $7, you know, I'll pay whatever I have to for real eggs. At the same time, I know there are people who are struggling to pay their rent and to have enough gas to get to work.
And worried about their children's next shoes.
And, exactly. Yes. And they have that. So that's something that Mouthful has talked about at various times, and we will talk about it again. I mean, that whole system of the pricing of food is a really difficult thing. And I so hope that there's going to be increasing access to quality food. And I know that this is getting way off topic, but I know that we'll probably be talking about it here in Mouthful at some point, that farmers markets are going to be able to take food stamps soon. And that's going to be one of the bricks in, you know, the new courtyard, say.
Well, I did farm markets in between 1980 and 88, and we could take all the food stamps we wanted.
Where
in those
were
days. In Heart of the City Farmers Market down in the Tenderloin in San Francisco.
Oh, down there, yeah.
But that's not universally applicable to farm markets now?
Well, first of all, farm markets are in part county operations, right?
Not necessarily. It's just why I didn't get qualified to take them until recently is because the bureaucracy was so over my head. I couldn't figure out how to answer the questions on the questionnaires. And they changed to credit cards now, so you need technology, you need machines, and then you need to figure out. I mean, I don't go and hand you a food stamp like I used to.
Oh, that's
I give
had
you
paper.
An EBT card, and then they have to give you a token, and so you need a machine, and then you need them tied into your bank account. So it's far more technological.
Well, when we did it in the 80s, they handed you a paper food stamp that
we used to have them too.
They don't have those anymore.
Yeah. So when they stopped, because we used to use those too, but when they stopped with that, then they had to figure out, and it took a few years to figure out how to do it. With the technology.
So you'd say 80% of the farm markets now take food stamps?
I don't know. A lot of them. I don't know 80%, but quite a few of us are just now getting qualified to. The state is giving you the machine instead of you having to pay $900. That's a
great
big deal.
The state's giving the machines.
They're giving the machines.
Outstanding.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're going to run out of time, so let's pull on the reins, come back to the Gravenstein, and let's talk a little bit more about Gravenstein Month. And I'm hoping you know the answer to this. There's going to be something about the shipping of Gravensteins. I did a recipe for slow food, I guess. What is that program where recipes are...
Oh, so, okay, with the fruit guys in San Francisco?
Yeah.
So you'll be able to go on our website and buy a box of Gravensteins.
Oh, you can buy a box from...
Yeah.
Now, what website is that?
It's Slow Food. I'm not sure if it's Slow Food Russian River.
Oh, yes.
Actually,
food,
I'm not very well educated.
Yeah, Slow Food. It's Slow
Russian
Food
River.
Russian River.
And
if you
quite,
just Google that. Not quite. Yeah. They're
so
just coming
you'll be
off
able
the trees.
To buy from the fruit guys. We'll ship it to you. And then that recipe that you contributed, we made little really sweet little recipe cards, and they'll go in the box. And you can get it at all the farmers markets that we're having Gravenstein events through the month of August. We'll have those recipe cards there, too.
Okay, and then I should also tell you, I will be posting it also on my new blog.
Uh-huh.
I have entered the blogosphere. You know, and it's not a bad
thing.
Is
it okay? Yeah.
It's okay, because, like, I'm not going to say I got up in a really bad mood this morning, you know, because I couldn't find my blue shoe.
Right.
It's called Eat This Now.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really like about it, like the first one, it was so great because I was driving into Santa Rosa to actually get trained on the application I have to use. And there was Sonoma Swamp Blues right there at the end of high school at Occidental. Mm-hmm. And it's a farm stand with blueberries right where they're picked. So I took some pictures. I went to the Press Democrat and got my instructions. I came back, posted my first blog. So it's called Eat This Now, and it's going to be... You know, if I find something I want to write about at the farmer's market in Sebastopol, it's going to be published 10 to 12 days later. Mm-hmm. So if I find something really exciting, I can publish. I can get it up there that day. So I will be doing something about the Gravensteins as soon as we see them in the first store or fruit stand. And you can see that just you go to the PressDemocrat.com and click on blogs and you see Eat This Now. And it will start cycling on the homepage.
And one thing, Michelle, I wanted to mention about the Gravensteins. People don't have to be afraid of buying a box because, you know, people aren't generally used to buying boxes like they used to 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20 years ago, that's the only
way. You wouldn't buy less.
I didn't even, when I used to go to the farm markets in the 80s, I only sold by the box. I never even brought a scale to the farm market. I just sold by the half boxes, 20 pounds. If people bought too many, they couldn't eat them, or they didn't have the refrigerators weren't big enough. They let a little bit of them get a little crinkly on the skin, but there's still plenty of moisture in the apple. And the Gravensteins is just a wonderful apple to cook, to fry, to make apple pancakes, to
I love fried apples. And Gravensteins make the best apple sauce. You don't need to add sugar. All you do is you chop them up and pour in a bottle of Zinfandel. And you cook them until the apples. You cook them until the apples are soft, and then you take the apples out, and you leave the juice because then you have apple juice and the Zinfandel, and you boil it down till it's a syrup. Stir it in and can it. It's fabulous.
It is.
And you can actually just put that stuff in the freezer too if you really don't want a can.
Yeah,
you put applesauce in the freezer and it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In freezer bags, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And on that note, we were out of time. So August is Gravenstein Month throughout Sonoma County Farmers Markets. You can always Google Slow Food Russian River. You can send an email to catsmilk@sonic.net, and I will tell you everything you need to know. Thanks very much to both of you
for being here.
Good luck
with the
apple season. And be sure to tune in next week when we are going to be talking about, oh boy, so excited, the unveiling of the most recent upgrades at Francis Ford Coppola Winery up in Geyserville. I think it's very exciting what's going up there. So have a great week. Meet me back here next week for Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour here on KRCB.
Just say it.